You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Actually, it's the lead play in our offense.
Yes, our YN or a tight end to open up somewhere between 6 feet and 9 feet. Get an isolation with the linebacker. Tell the tackle to take the defensive end if he's over him. If he's not, to drive down on the first man to his inside. If the YN has the linebacker taken out, he cuts inside. If the YN has the linebacker in, he comes all the way around. If you look at this play, what we're trying to get is a seal here and a seal here and try to run this play in the alley.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome into Packers Total Access. My name is Clayton. You can check us out on Packernet.com. Find me on Twitter at Packers_Access. Joined alongside a very special guest today, we got former 11-year NFL vet, offensive lineman, Mr. Mike Wall. Obviously played for your Green Bay Packers. You can follow him on X at MikeWall68 and also check out his work over at Process to Perform. Mike, it's been a little bit, buddy. How you been doing?
What's up, Clayton? I've been doing pretty well, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Been enjoying the breakdowns you've been doing, all the film breakdowns and everything. I was just watching a couple clips there. You kind of breaking down some of the Niners tape and all that. And it's really cool to see you get into some of the college prospects as well. Really good stuff there, man. Appreciate the work you do. Takes a lot of the work out of it for us fans when you hear a former player who's actually been there, done that, got the t-shirt, breaking it down as opposed to us going, what the hell am I actually looking at right now? So we appreciate it. We'll get right to it. I know you got a tight schedule. State of the O-line, the last time we spoke with you was back kind of towards the end of the season, if I remember correctly, and I had asked you, hey, how do you feel about this offensive line? And you correct me if I'm wrong. I kind of got the vibe that you were essentially saying, hey, look, 74 at left guard, 70 at right tackle, you're good to go. Everywhere else, probably looking to improve if possible. Just wanted to kind of get your take on that right now going into the draft here. Obviously, they didn't really do anything in free agency, which I don't think many people expected them to do. Obviously, with the departure there of John Runyon Jr. at right guard, just kind of the state of the O-line right now. How are you feeling about it right now, Mike?
Well, if the Packers, you think about it on offense, they lost their two best players, and nobody seems to really – I mean, they brought in Josh Jacobs to replace Aaron Jones, and we can go into whether or not you think that's a net positive or negative over the course of this next season. But you do lose David Bakhtiari. And I'll say this. Like, Sean Ryan's going for his first trip around the sun as a bona fide day one starter. So you got that. And you probably feel like you should give him a chance there. And maybe you don't feel good enough about – there were some free agent guards you could have felt good about, but you're not going to pick up a free agent guard. But maybe you don't feel good enough about a guy drafting a guard in the first round, at least, that's going to compete for that position. When you look at Rashid Walker, and I think, quite frankly, Goody and Coastal Floor, if I'm right, have kind of said the same thing, which is, listen, he's got a lot of upside, but he's got to put together a more consistent game. And you would say over the course of the season, you know, he certainly was trending up towards the last, you know, four or five games of the season. He kind of figured out his pass set. Is there a ceiling on him as compared to maybe some of the top guys? Like, he's fallen in the footsteps of Chad and then David Bakhtiari, and that's just tough, man. You're coming to get some two really, really good players, so there's an opportunity to improve there. I don't quite frankly know if it's in this draft, because you're not going to get Joe Wald at one as the top guy, and the rest of the guys, I love the kid from Washington. The Oregon State kid's not going to go on our team because he's a right tackle. A lot of people like you know, some of the taller, bigger bodies, the kid out of Oklahoma. Obviously, the guy from Alabama's got some crazy numbers. I don't trust Alabama tackles, you know, and quite frankly, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I've watched a ton of tape on him, but I've watched tape on those guys. The kid from Arizona's got some he's got a little bit of juice to him, but I don't think he's a first-round pick. I think he's a project. So when you look at Troy Faletano, like, he's the best guy out there that could be at 25, but he's probably going to be a better guard. Now you're, what am I going to do with Jenkins kind of thing? So I don't think there's a guy out there that could beat up Rashid Walker, at least for next year at the tackle position. My focus then goes to center, where Josh Myers, I thought he was going to – listen, I thought he was going to be next Corey Linsley. Like, there's no reason he shouldn't be, quite frankly. He's got the pedigree and the athleticism to do it. He's certainly improved over the last five games, in particular over last year. And when you watch that tape, he actually played pretty well. He does have his limitations. But there's three guys in this draft: Jackson Powers Johnson, Zach Frazier, and then Graham Barton from Duke, who's, you know, played tackle at Duke for the last 3 years, but is going to project it as a center. And as a center, the guy's an absolute freak of nature, man. I mean, all of those guys are like either four-time state champion wrestlers or sub-540 guys. And, you know, in my book, both of those beat out almost everybody else in football, especially at the line position. So I think any one of those three guys could come in and start on this team. The question would be, do you move Josh Myers to center, or from center to right guard? Do you move them to right guard for a season and they can battle out next year? Or do you feel like you're comfortable with where you're at right now and you just want to add competition day two or day three? I don't know what that answer is. I know that I would be really excited about any one of those center prospects.
Got it. Yeah, Graham Barton is the one that really kind of piques my interest the most. Obviously, Jackson Powers Johnson, the best center in the draft. At least that seems to be the consensus. But you get a guy like Graham Barton, it does give you some versatility, right? I mean, he could potentially compete with Josh Myers for center. He could also plug in right there at right guard if you don't like what you've got in Sean Ryan, right?
I don't think he can play guard. At a high, high level. I think he's a good player too. I watch a lot of tape. I really like watching. Listen, I like watching tape, and I like watching dudes that can move. And he can move. His hands aren't. He's not upper body. He doesn't play with upper body strength. He doesn't strike and use those hands well enough for the speed and the power of things that happen inside at the guard position. You get a lot of help at center. Like, you got 8 snaps a game where you're by yourself. And he'll be able to, and certainly when you're controlling the snap of the ball and everything, I think that separation, you do look at it and go, was that Mike Flanagan out there that has that ability to actually move out and play left tackle in a pinch? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose that's what you got, but I don't know if that's worth, like, in other words, if all three of those guys were there, I don't know if that's the reason I draft him over Zach Frazier, who, again, like, I'm just telling you, like, watch Ray Lewis, man. Like, you don't go wrong if you got a 4-time state champ wrestler. Playing. Watch Stephen Neal. You remember Stephen Neal?
Sounds familiar.
Stephen Neal got brought in by my agent, Neil Cornrich, to the New England Patriots. Bill Belichick put him on the practice squad. He called up my agent and said, hey, I want to play NFL. And my agent, what makes you think you're qualified to play in the National Football League? He goes, well, I played a little bit in high school, and I'm also the heavyweight Greco-Roman champion of the world. And it turns out he was pretty good at football too. So I kind of look at that and go, if that's a template for, you know, being good, Scott Wells, a 4-time state champ as well, I believe.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Right. And he got out of wrestling because there wasn't enough money in it. So when I hear a center wrestled at that high level for a long time, it's like a shoe-in deal, man. It's like a lineman going to Iowa. It's a shoe-in for me.
And you're referring to Zach Frazier, correct?
I am.
Did you say a 4-time state champion? Is that right?
I believe that's right.
Gotcha. We'll double check that. I appreciate that. That's good information. It's the first time I've heard that. So that's awesome there. We did a mock the other day, and I'm sure you've seen 10,000 mocks come across your feed there on Twitter, Mike. But we did one the other day.
I've seen zero, Clayton. Go ahead. You'll be the first one. Go ahead. I've seen zero.
So we did a couple the other day and came away with Zach Frazier in the, I think it was the second or third round is where we kind of pulled the trigger on him. Where do you see him going? You got a decent guesstimate where a center like Zach Frazier, if a team falls in love with him, how early do you think he would go? They've got him in the 48th spot here on the 33rd team website.
Well, here's the thing. Like, is he Tyler Lindenbaum athletic? He's not. Let's say Tyler Lindenbaum's the Ravens center from Iowa. Let's say he's the standard right now in drafting a guy high because you know he's a super athletic center. So he's not there. Creed Humphrey? I feel pretty good about Creed Humphrey now.
Absolutely.
And you kind of say if he gets drafted in that same area, that probably feels about right. So could be on.
Got it. Good stuff, man. All right, so we hit on offensive line. Let me ask you this. You know, we obviously switch into Jeff Hafley's 4-3 defense, and I do think that gets thrown around pretty loosely seeing that most teams are playing that nickel, right? You're in nickel 70, some teams 80% of the time. When you go to build out a 4-3 defense as opposed to a 34 from an offensive line's perspective, offensive linemen's perspective, you've seen a lot of 34 defenses, I'm sure, in your day. I mean, it was really kind of – I mean, it was blossoming. It seemed like there in the early 2000s it started to really take off, right?
Yep.
Do you feel like – what do you think changes from an offensive line standpoint? And I'm trying to get to the perks of switching to a 4-3 as opposed to a 3-4. It seemed like – and I'm kind of reading between the lines. I heard Tausch talk about this, Mark Towser talk about this a few weeks ago, that he felt like it was a little more difficult to run block against a 34 base as opposed to a 43 base. And I'm sure both of them has their strengths and weaknesses. Yeah. But,
well, for him it would be, right? There's a guy running a 4 technique on him.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that?
Yeah, so initially, Belichick made the 3-4 super popular. And what Bill Belichick just exploited this thing where, like, there was a ton of these defensive tackles that were, like, these 6'5", 6'6", like, 310-pound guys that, you know, Ty Warren, Richard Seymour, and they didn't know what to do with them. And he was like, nobody's picking these guys up. And then there's these monsters sitting in the middle that nobody, because they're not penetrating defensive tackles. What am I going to do with them? Oh, if I put them all in the line of scrimmage at the same time, now I can play two really athletic, larger linebackers outside. Mm-hmm. And I've got this like five-man shield right now where it's going to be really, really hard to get off the line of scrimmage. And that's what, that's essentially what the 3-4 does, is at the point of attack for a lot of plays in the National Football League, the point of attack is like right around the tackle, right? The inside stuff might be around the, you know, the first defensive tackle off the ball, but all your middle zone and outside zone is off the tackle and the tight end. That's at least where the running back's aiming point is. So the ability to stop movement at that position makes it extremely difficult, and you get a lot of one-on-one blocks with, you know, quite frankly, tackles usually aren't as good at run blocking as guards and centers are historically. So you put a guy out there that's right on his face and you all of a sudden have to move him by yourself, you've got a huge problem. Now you can send the guard over there, but you got these off-the-ball linebackers sitting at 4 yards, and as soon as that guard turns his shoulders, man, they're hitting the hole. And now they're going to backdoor you and make the play in the backfield. So it creates just different angles that you're not used to blocking. Mm-hmm. What I would say now is this. The game has completely changed.
Right.
And to your point, I just did a whole show on this and how Quay Walker can kind of be unlocked, in my opinion, by kind of figuring out, you know, remember when Quay Walker got drafted, it was all about how fast he is, his range, right, how he can be in the nickel, how he can play, you know, a dime backer and get into the slot and play zone. Well, we haven't done any of that with him. We put him in the middle.
Right.
So imagine if you just now decide, instead of having like the star position at Alabama, being like a Xavier McKinney, which he actually did play at Alabama now instead of postseason.
There you go.
Right. You go ahead and say, oh, we're going to put Quay where we thought he was going to go in the first place, and we're going to bring in a stud to be middle linebacker, because quite frankly, Quay doesn't like taking on guards and centers nearly as much as Isaiah McKinney. So if you want to go into that 4-3 look, you have a ton of options if you have like a Derek Brooks, Jesse Armstead, a Junior Seau guy at that other linebacker position where you can do anything with them. If you got one of those dudes, man, there's a lot of stuff you can do to really put a defense an offense in kind of disharmony. But I think traditionally from an offensive line standpoint, when the 3-4 was first introduced, it's easier to pass block. It's harder to run against. I think it'd be the easiest way to put it.
Got it. That's the way I always took it too. It's like you put those three 300 pounders right there in the middle of the line of scrimmage and eat up some double teams, kind of play a two gap in most cases, right? Especially back then in the early 2000s where teams like you would play two backs, right? And you correct me if I'm wrong. It seems like more often than not, if you're in a two back, it equals two gap on the defensive side, right, as opposed to a one back, one gap. Is that kind of how you see that from a defensive standpoint? Do you think they're trying to up front play that two gap top front? Or
initially, that's what they were all doing. They were all two gapping on the four techniques or the tight fives. Teams did it differently back then too. Like the Jets, for example, they would play their guys literally a yard off the ball. A couple of different teams would do that. And so you'd get like this running start and they would just sit and squat and you'd kind of run into them and you get like this half a step of momentum. And they're going like, holy hell, they're already sunk in. Right. So Every team ran it a little bit differently. Obviously, people have different philosophies. Look, for me, the hardest thing to play against is a good penetrating defensive tackle. A good penetrating defensive tackle trumps all, because it's the only way that I'm worried about getting beat for a sack and getting beat in the run game. Against a 3-4, I'm never worried about getting beat for a sack.
Got it. Do you feel like Devontae White, Kenny Clark, Carl Brooks, do you think they're equipped to kind of play that way in a 4-3, that penetrating, you know, kind of play the run to the quarterback, if you will?
Well, I'd say this. It's too bad that Kenny last year, I think he had 8.5 sacks or something like that. So right, he can do it. But I do think it's a damn shame sometimes that, and Kenny's had a great career, but I think it's a shame that he wasn't drafted as a penetrating three technique. Because I think that would have unlocked a whole side of his game that we really haven't been privy to. And, you know, quite frankly, at this point, like he's got a couple, I think, good years left. But you're not going to see, like, if he was put in, you know, the Quinnen Williams position for the Jets, what he maybe could have become from just a penetrating, like a guy that's really, really disruptive. Not that he hasn't been, not that he's had a bad career, but it's a different kind of career. Like, he hasn't quite had the stats to back up how good he actually is. So, yeah, I think he can definitely do it, Carl Brooks. Devontae Wyatt, listen.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We get all hyped up thinking we're going to get some high-value Jordan Love card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view on all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now when I buy Slab Packs on Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And honestly, the best thing for me and my son is the fact that we're kind of novices into this. When I walk into a card shop with my son, and a card says it costs $40, kind of just taking his word for it that that's a good value. So I appreciate the transparency on grading, as well as just getting excited about seeing what you could potentially get. Right now, you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/packdaddy. Wow, that's crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's $40 right there. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/packdaddy for 10% off your first purchase. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
He definitely got better last year. You're still looking at some leverage things. He's improved. Is there room for a bona fide run stopper on this team at like a nose tackle now that you're going to go to the 4-3? I think that's like maybe the more interesting question, because you do have TJ Slayton. You do have Devontae Wyatt at that second spot. Carl Brooks is going to come in nickel. But do you have that, like, you know, do you have that Dexter Lawrence type player in the draft that maybe is worthwhile? Because, like, we saw it from Mozzie Smith down in Dallas, the Michigan guy. Like, that's not really a worthwhile pick unless you just hit it spot on.
Got it. And that's something that's definitely come up several times when we're doing mock draft, you know, kind of exercises here to see how the draft may or may not fall. There's a couple times Johnny Jerzon Newton from Illinois has fell right in their lap at 25. I don't know if that's realistic. Byron Murphy being the second best defensive tackle, according to the 33rd team.
I got to ask, why are you using 33rd team, man?
You don't like the 33rd team?
I don't know that I like him or don't like him. I shouldn't have said it. That reason, why are you losing the 30? Why are you using the 33rd team, Clayton?
The reason I use the 33rd team is because there's a lot of former execs, former head coaches that are on staff to advise.
Yeah.
And when they build the boards out, they do it in a realistic manner of actually doing grading, like the grading system.
So a bunch of, I'll say it another way. A bunch of dudes that got fired for not doing their job very well is the people you listen to. Got it. Okay. Let's go on.
All right. So what do you, this is a good question. What do you recommend? What is out there?
I don't want, I say that and I don't have any answers because I don't do mock drafts. I could care less, but I do. I always find that like,
cause you're not a big fan of PFF at all, right?
Well, it's not that here's the truth about PFF. I think PFF in its place is really good because it gives if you know, it's not perfect. What it does is it allows it saves coaches time because it scripts all the plays. So it's like, this is the formation they're in. This is the concept they're running. This is how many times this player had a tackle on this play. What I don't like about PFF is it doesn't give you context on why something happened. So when it's given to a fan, a fan now says, or media, a media player now says, so-and-so is the number one player as per PFF, when players don't think that guy's worth a damn. Or conversely, a guy got beat six times last game, according to PFF. Well, the player that won six times was actually on a different player or the running back or something else, or they were sliding away, blah, 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 blah. And there's no context. And so from a player standpoint, I hate the fact that somebody has media authority or is curating content about me that has no like contextual awareness about what's actually happening in the game. But from a system that's being sold to media outlets and teams to just like, I'm going to put data onto your system so you can populate it and not waste time. I think it's phenomenal for that.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of what we do. We try to cross-reference on this show. We use a multitude of things, especially draft time. We use the consensus big board. We use the 33rd team big board. Mm-hmm. We use PFF's big board, but we like the PFF big board to go back and look at the college grades. And it's something that we always specify. Look, it's not the gospel. It's just another tool we can use. And typically what you do, take four or five different sites. All right, let's try to find the commonalities, right? That's the kind of the approach that we try to take. I'm always open to something different. And that's why I always like to ask that question. Like,
coin flip it. That's all. You know what they're doing up there, right? You know, all this talk and everything, they set up all the rooms and everything.
Up where?
Up in the draft, the big draft room, the war room.
All right.
They're up there. They got all these things on the board and all this stuff's going on. And I'd say there's got to be at least eight teams at least twice a night go like this. I'm being facetious, but that's how it seems sometimes, isn't it?
But hey, you see the success rate. It's so low, man.
Thing, right? It's like, right. I just did a thing on this, Clayton, and go watch the block party because I just did a thing on when you have those top 30 visits and how they go versus how you would probably design it if you could start from scratch. And it's amazing, like the writing's on the wall, why they miss on so many of these guys.
Right. Yeah. It's wild. The draft's been going on for so long and still there's, and you know as well as anyone, you can't test their heart, right? You can't test how's that guy going to react when he's getting his ass kicked, right?
But you can, here's the thing though, honestly, if you know the game and you know human psychology and how people think, then when you're asking questions, you're watching film with a guy, you're getting to know that person, you know what's rehearsed and what's not. Like a shark smells another shark, right? A shark, like you put me in a room with another lineman, I could tell you if he's about it or not. I can't tell you, I don't know his numbers. Maybe I've never seen him play on tape, but I could tell you if he's about that life or not. And I don't think teams use enough ex-players, ambassadors or they force them to use their formula instead of going like, why don't we go outside and talk this out? I want to get to know you on a different level because I want to know how you think and how you process things, how excited you are about the sport. Yeah. We just don't do a very good job of that because everyone wants to have a system because that system's easy to replicate, even though it might not be ideal for the scenario.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you talk about you have guys that'll take them out and kind of get to know them a bit. I know we just lost an absolute legend in Green Bay, right? And I know I'm going to butcher his name. I didn't know much about Coach Larry, offensive line coach, obviously with the Packers from 99 to 2005. Hearing Mark Towser talk about him, Mike, it was like this dude touched his soul, man. You played for him, right? Am I thinking right?
I did.
Yeah. How did you feel about Coach Larry? And how do you pronounce his last name?
Bechtel.
Okay. I didn't want to butcher it. What did you think of Coach Bechtel? Did he have a pretty big impact on you? Because you guys, I guess, came in about the same time, right? You were drafted in 99. Am I thinking right?
I was drafted in 98. I think he came in 99 with Ray Rhodes.
Got it.
And he was there until the day I left, actually. Yeah. I was there until he was there until 2005. I think he was there for maybe a couple more years after that. Coach Bechtel, I'm not gonna lie, Coach Bechtel and I did not have a good relationship.
Okay.
But I'll say this. He was the one thing you could always guarantee, and part of it was because of Beck. And part of it was because of Mike Sherman being an former offensive line coach. We never went into a game with, and this happens on every other team I've ever played on or been a part of. We never went into a game with plays where just because you drew it up on paper meant that I could get to that guy, right? Yeah. Like if we could go into the room, and a part of this is earned, but you could go into the room with a guy like Beck and say, listen, we can't block this. And if you call this, because we know what's going to happen, you're going to call it eight times, and we're going to get all eight of them aren't going to work, and we're going to come back in here, and you're going to tell us we're the reason we lost. Because that's what happens at every other team.
Yeah.
And he would go upstairs, and he'd throw a fit, him and Sherm. They'd battle it out, and he'd get the play off the table. So the one thing that we always felt secure with, I think, in Green Bay when Beck was there, was that we were going into the game from a game plan standpoint as it pertained to the offensive line, where we felt like we had a chance to be successful. And ultimately, I think as players, players only want two things, right? We want a chance to be successful, and we want the tools to find that success. And knowing that you had a chance to be successful week in and week out is not as common, I think, as one would think.
Got it. Yeah, I remember you saying that before, though. They would go in, draw up a play, and you guys would be telling them, hey, look, we can't get there. We can't get to that point. Mm-hmm. And then come back on Monday, Tuesday, whenever film was, and they're looking at you, oh, you didn't get to your spot. Yeah, no crap. I told you before we even got – I mean, it's got to be tough. And I'm sure in your time, too, you come across coaches, assistants that never played at that level either. That's got to be kind of – that's a real thing, right, Mike? Like,
I think so. I never actually had a coach that played at the level that, that I played at. I don't think, at least at the offensive line position. I had – football is the only sport that's like that, really. You look at – I'm watching a soccer game on the side TV here. They're all ex-players. All the managers are ex-players. Baseball, all the managers are ex-players. Basketball, for the majority of the coaches are ex-players. And football, for whatever reason, is one of the few sports where because it's – the currency in football became who can grind it out more. Like, who can stay at the office for longer,
yep,
instead of who can develop these players more. And that became the culture of football. It was like, well, if I don't need to be an ex player, if I can stay there for 24 hours a day or 23 hours a day and get noticed, then that started to matter more, I think, than who can develop the player at the highest level. And, that's not obviously true. I think Bill Belichick didn't play pro football, right? And look at Bill Belichick. So this isn't a blanket statement,
right?
But I do think, from a culture standpoint, as you look at football versus almost every other sport professionally that I've seen, the amount of time spent, like, that is a currency that is traded and bragged about much more so than results or development based kind of process based criteria, which is, then plays into the hands maybe of a larger pool of candidates than just the guys who played.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. And, I was just, as you were talking, I'm sitting here thinking, all right, former players that are head coaches in the league right now, D'Amico Ryans ripped it up last year.
Yep.
You've got Dan Campbell in Detroit, ripped it up last year. Yep. Right. Now you've got Gerard Mayo going to be a first year coach in New England. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I mean, I think that's the only, is that the only two former players that are head coaches, and they both had a ton of success. I mean, that's
And Mike Vrabel doesn't have a job for reasons that are not related to necessarily performance on the field right now. He was one of the best coaches in the National Football League. But there's a lot of I mean, like Pete Carroll was I would have loved to play for Pete Carroll. You know, I mean, there's guys out there. Listen, it's, I guess the point is there's some intimacy things, particularly when you're a position coach. Like, I can tell you how it feels to get cross-chopped by Warren Sapp. And if you don't know, it's hard to just look at the tape and say, you know, that's why we always talk about, we got to speak in simple terms. But we also have to be specific. We can't just say play lower. We got to teach you what that means. And that's the difference, I think. And like, again, context matters. PFF, context matters. It's all this stuff with, if you don't have context in it, it's tough to teach.
Got it. Let's shift gears to the linebacker position. You know, obviously the Packers switching to a 4-3. Going to change some stuff up a little. They're going to be a nickel the majority of the time. So what we referred to as a nickel 2-4-5 now becomes a nickel 4-2-5 with the same front, most likely, right? Linebacker position, you mentioned Quay. I think it's pretty common knowledge. Most people are looking at Quay like, hey, he needs to play Will. That's the first question. Do you agree with that, or do you think there's a place for him to play Mike or potentially play Sam? What would you think, just on the surface, where would Quay Walker's best fit be as a linebacker in a 4-3, do you think?
Well, again, if we're assuming that they're going to play a 4-3, the only way they could play that consistently is if Quay was that Will linebacker who could kind of move outside the box and do all these things. That's a very, very unique skill set that he has. There's a couple guys in the draft that, you know, are playing all around the board as well in college, but to be able to do it at the highest level in the pros, he's kind of proven that. I think that's one of his unique skill sets. So I think it unlocks potential that we haven't seen from him, quite frankly. I think it gets him away from the middle of the field where he's got to take on guards and centers all day. You know, he's made, and I'm not making, this isn't to put anybody down, but I'll bet you he's made more tackles 8 yards past the line of scrimmage than any linebacker in the league over the last 3 years. And that a lot of that's by choice. And it's just kind of the style of ball he's been taught to play, because he could run around everybody at Georgia, right? And probably in high school as well. But, you know, in order, you see Isaiah McDuffie, who's not the athlete that Quay is, but he makes so many plays at and around the line of scrimmage because he's the aggressor. Now they're going to have to make a decision if they're going to put Quay in the middle, because he's got to stay on the field and they don't want to play a third linebacker in those 13 personnel looks or 12 personnel looks, because they're, you know, two receiving tight ends. Well, then they're going to have to put him on run stunts like last year they did towards the end of the season, because when he runs stunts, he's very effective. Like, in other words, when he gets to the line of scrimmage, he does a good job. It's kind of forcing his hand a little bit and making him feel like, making him understand the correlation between him getting towards the line of scrimmage and the team's overall success. So, I guess that's a long-winded way of saying if they're going to play a 4-3, it's probably going to have to be with Quay at Will.
Got it. So if you were to try to describe from an offensive line's perspective against a 4-3 defense, what are maybe 1, 2, 3 key attributes you think in a Mike linebacker when it comes to a 4-3? Like, if they're going out and they're going to try to find their Mike in this draft, and I know it's kind of a weak draft when it comes to linebackers, at least according to the experts, quote this, right? Yep. You got like your Junior Colson, your Cedric Gray. They're listed as Mike linebackers. They've got Peyton Willis listed more as a Will. Trayvon Wallace. Do you think he could play Mike? Peyton.
I didn't watch a linebacker on tape.
Okay.
Edrian Cooper, Junior Colson, Peyton Wilson. I didn't look at Trotter, although his dad was a bad man, but he was too small, 228. I didn't watch a guy, and I didn't see the kid from Ohio State yet, Eichenberg.
Right.
I didn't watch a guy that I thought had good enough block destruction to play in the middle.
Got it.
Okay. Against an NFL team tomorrow. Right. Now, I could probably say the same thing about Patrick Queen when he was a rookie, though. Right. You certainly say the same thing about Quay when he was a rookie. So that's not saying you can't be taught, but you got to have the right guy to teach it, and you got to have willing to be taught. So Yep. When I watched this stuff, my criteria was he's got to be over 230. He's got to run sub 4.65.
Yeah.
And of those guys, well, to your, answer your question, Peyton or Clayton, the three attributes: block destruction, sound tackler, speed, and probably in that order.
Okay. What was the first one again?
So you have to be able to get off a block destruction. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Most of these guys can't get off a block. The second thing is when you get to the hole, you have to be the hammer, not the nail. Like you have to just be a very, very confident tackler. He's got to be a very, very fundamentally sound tackler. And then the third one is either A, speed because of the way the game's played now, or you could just say football. It's probably football intelligence.
Right.
FBI. Maybe more so than because it's going to be play speed, not 40 speed, but it's going to be football intelligence. When I watch the linebackers now, quite frankly, my first thought is, oh, they're ranking these guys off of 40 times or something. Because I don't know what else they're ranking them off of. Just because it would be really tough. There's upside to all of these players athletically, and that's why you have RAS scores and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But it'd be really tough for a lot of these guys to come in and be successful in the middle of the field because they just can't get off a block very well.
Gotcha. Yeah, if we pull up the 33rd team that you love so much.
I don't have anything against 33rd team. I just think it's kind of funny, right?
Right. I love when you go on the rants, though. Because it's true. Everybody, especially in 2024, you want to attach a number. All right, this is this guy. This is his rating. This is what he is. And until they get on, getting the old Mike Tyson quote, until you get hit in the mouth, you know what I mean? Right. Like, you don't really know about someone. They've got Junior Colson as Mach 1.
I liked him.
Yeah, he's my favorite. That's the guy that I keep finding myself going, I think he's my favorite. Peyton Wilson's great and all, but if he hadn't won the Underwear Olympics, I don't think we're talking about him as much.
Really? See, okay. Yeah. So I would say, so Peyton Wilson had 138 tackles last year, had 6 sacks. So you can put him all over the field. Runs like a deer.
Oh, they got him like a wheel with it.
The only reason that he's not number one is because he had 2 ACL surgeries already.
Do you see that as a bad thing, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Do you really? Okay.
Well, if you had 2, what's how far away is 3?
Yeah, well, I've always looked at it like, or at least I've heard, and you know way more than I do. When you get an ACL, reconstructed, it's like, okay, once it heals, it's stronger than it was going in. Do you not see it that way?
Well, but there's so many things that come along with that. Did you have a meniscus tear? Did you lose any cartilage? Like there's other things going on in your knee other than just that tear. And once you have 2 of them, it starts to be, it raises eyebrows. So that would be the only reason I would think he's not number one. When I watch him, look, Junior Colson, he had a play against, what was that game I just watched? Maybe Duke or something, but he had, not Duke. Well, I he had a play where he got blocked by a tight end. He got a play where he got blocked by a wide receiver on a toss crack, but he also had a play where he undercut a pulling guard and a tackle and made a play at the line of scrimmage. So all of these guys can do it. Peyton Wilson takes on a double team from 2 linemen, slips the block and makes a play for a 3-yard gain. Also gets wiped out by tight ends on NFL style gap schemes. So all of these guys have this limitation as far as like, you're just not seeing a Bernardo Harris. You're just not seeing like a Jeremiah Trotter. You're not seeing these guys who can just thump. Right. And Edgerrin Cooper, a lot of guys like Edgerrin Cooper. Edgerrin Cooper can't, right now doesn't have the upper body strength to get off an NFL lineman's block, right? In the time that it takes, like the punch stab, and shed. You just doesn't have that yet. Now he could get it, just doesn't have it yet. It's just like the kid from Notre Dame I looked at. He bench pressed 16 reps, 225. You and I can probably do 225 16 times, and I have one arm.
I know you can, but I can't.
but my point is, that's not a score that you would expect from a middle linebacker going into the NFL draft. But I just think now, like I said, I always talk about how the 40 time really can tell you if you're going to get a good offensive lineman or not. I'm the only person in the country saying that. Every other expert in the country is going, it doesn't mean anything. And then I go, well, show me a bad one. And they go, I can't. Well, it probably means something. And it's like, exactly. If you can't bench press 225 more than 16 times and you're not a wide receiver, I don't think that's a good thing. So I think a lot of these guys have room to grow, but you know, to your point with the Underwear Olympics, we do have to base some of this now with these younger players. And linebacker is a very, very difficult position to get better at in college, I think, just like offensive line is. But you have to base a lot of this on, like, the relative athletic scores in these 40 times, because you just have to start going, what's their ceiling? And do I have the quality staff to get them to their ceiling?
Right.
Or do I know this guy well enough after coming in for his top 30 visit that I feel like he's a guy who's going to strive to get to his ceiling, or is he comfortable being a pro? Is that good enough? And you got to be, like, now more than ever, you got to know those things before you go to draft day, because there's just not enough tape that can convince me that, like, any of these guys is better than Isaiah McDuffie.
Yeah. Everything with you when it comes to, you know, players and how a roster is constructed, it always comes back to development, right? Like every time it's who is developing these guys, right? Yeah. I know they just hired, I think his name's Campanile, Coach Campanile, linebacker coach. You guys never crossed paths at any point, did you? Because he was in Miami, but you helped in Miami there for a short stint, right? Am I thinking
about I'm not familiar with him.
Gotcha. He comes from a family, a family of football coaches. His dad coached, you know, a long, long time. His brother's in coach, and he's in coach, and he's kind of this fire-on-fire guy. Everybody fell in love with him because he, on Hard Knocks, he had the Vince Lombardi quote and the big, you know, fire him up, rah-rah. Cool. I'm interested to see if he kind of changes the attitude there in the linebacker room for sure, because I think it is something that's kind of been lacking. I think one thing's for sure, you know, whether it's Devondre or Quay, you never felt like they were at their peak as far as, like, I don't want to say excited, but there was just no aggressiveness. You know what I'm saying? It just felt like they were either being told, or they were choosing to kind of, and I kind of got this from your breakdowns too. Like they're just kind of, they're not really attacking. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, I think Devondre, when Devondre left, he came out with a series of, you know, kind of tweet rants, I think.
Yeah.
And I said it when they came out, listen, I don't know if that's the way that I would end a relationship, but I don't think that anything he said was not true.
Gotcha. Because you could see it, right? You could see it.
Oh, yeah. You could see, I mean, everything that he said in those, shouldn't say everything, but from what I read, it sounded very plausible that was happening, because that's what you saw on tape.
Yeah. I remember us talking about that. It was like back in December. I think it was after the Bucks game. And we talked about it. It's just like, yeah, because the thing you kept saying to me on here was this is entry level stuff. Like, what are we doing? So anyway, we're over on time. Mike, I appreciate you, buddy, hopping on here. It's always good to talk ball with you. I'm going to pay for you a 33rd team subscription. So you got it. Thank there. You. And you're good to go. Nah, you got anything else you want to hit on before we wrap up here, man?
Nah, man, it's always fun talking to you, Clayton. Nah. Thanks for having me on, bud.
I really, really appreciate your time. And you educate us every time. And this is why we want to reach out to you. We hate to bug you, but at the same time, we want people who have been there, done that, rather than us just leaning on stuff like this, right? Because we're all just grabbing at straws. That's the way it is. And it sounds, you know, like you said, sometimes in the front office are doing a little bit of that too, with that little coin flip there. So appreciate you, Mike.
It's a very scientific coin, though. It's in jest. Those guys. Listen, here's the truth, Clayton. And we just talked about it with the coaching thing. Those guys work some hours that are ridiculous, and they put a lot of time in, and I have a lot of respect for the amount of work they put in. I just don't, like, I've never seen the correlation between hours spent and, like, quality and quantity are a real thing. And, like, when you're developing a player, when you're trying to develop yourself, like, quantity and quality are two different metrics of, and we can't look at them like they're uniform. And, sometimes I think these guys all do that. That's all.
Got it. And that's the stuff you're going to get over at Process to Perform. Make sure you guys and gals go give them a follow on X at MikeWall68. Got the best film breakdown in the business. Like I said, did it for 11 years. Mike, we appreciate your time, man. It's good talking to you.
All right, bud. See
you. Take care. All right, guys. We appreciate y'all hanging out with us. We'll be back tonight for PTA Live at 7 p.m. Central. Everyone have a wonderful day. Until then, we'll see you tonight.
The power sweep actually is the It's the lead play in our offense.
We ask our YN or a tight end to open up somewhere between 6 feet and 9 feet. Get an isolation with the linebacker. You tell the tackle to take the defensive end if he's over him. If he's not, to drive down on the first man to his inside. If the YN has the linebacker taken out, he cuts inside. If the YN has the linebacker in, come all the way around. You look at this play where we're trying to get a seal here and a seal here. We've got to run this play in the alley.